Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone. This is Ray Penny with New Jersey School Board Association, Conversations on New Jersey Education. This is a school law edition. We'll be checking in with Derlise Gutierrez on the school law issues of personnel issues that school boards have to worry about during the pandemic. Right now, she has not called in at this moment, so I am doing a little dog and pony show, and I'll give her another couple minutes to call in, and then we'll deal with that from there. So what can I talk about? Well, one of the things that, when we set it up with her, one of the things that we have set up is that most people have teacher contracts. They have not, you know, from 2 or 3 years ago, they has nothing to do with the virtual learning and all the things that occurred during the pandemic. So when you have to get back to those things and you have a lot of issues that the teacher's contract do not deal with. So that's what we'll be discussing in about 1 minute. And I see one person on live right now, but in the chat room, my friend Al Miller. But I do not have my guest right now. And if she doesn't come on in about one more minute, this might be here. Hi, Derlise.
Hi, Ray.
Hi. How are you?
Hi, how are you?
We're live.
Okay, great. Hi.
So I'm going to just set the stage. I did say in the beginning, first of all, why don't you introduce yourself and your firm and where how long you guys have been together and what districts you do. I mean, not all of them, because I know you do a lot.
Sure. Happy to. Good afternoon.
Hi. Hi, Tracy, Annie, and Yay. Hi, Jen. I'm Tracy. Nice to meet you. Hi, Lori.
So,
hi, Tracy. How are you? Good. I feel like I know you, ladies, because I've read
the book. I'm sorry, Ray. I'm hearing
okay.
Other people.
Okay, I'm there. Yeah, that was someone else. All right, you can go.
Okay. Ready? Okay. So my
yep.
name is Derlise Gutierrez, and our firm is Adams Gutierrez and Lattie Boudere. We're a women and minority-owned law firm. Our office is in Newark, and we have another office in Marlton, New Jersey. We dedicate ourselves to the representation of school districts, colleges, municipalities, and private sector employers. We've been in business now 13 years. February 1st will be our 13th year, our 13th anniversary. But the three owners, Sherry Adams, Perry Lattie Boudere, and I have each well over 30 years of experience in representing school districts in all areas. We are general counsel, labor negotiations counsel, and special education counsel to somewhere around 50 boards of education in New Jersey. We also work as defense counsel with several insurance carriers who defend school districts, so we do a great deal of litigation in state and federal court, as well as in front of administrative agencies. And we've dedicated our legal careers to the representation of school districts, because our mission as a firm is to help our clients provide the best education for the children of New Jersey. And we feel that with training and with great legal advice, we can help our districts navigate the very complicated legal field that governs school districts, federal law, state law, state regulations. And by helping them to focus their energies on education and keeping them in good, you know, give them good, sound legal advice, it'll keep them out of trouble, and they can focus their resources on educating children. And that's who we are.
You spoke about the difficult, complicated field of education law. I think the pandemic might have made it even more complicated. And one of the things that we'll be talking about, and I mentioned this before, is personnel issues. You know, most districts have contracts with their employees, whether it's the teachers and other staff, but I don't think too many of those contracts really had a clause in there about hybrid learning and remote learning and all those assignments. So the personnel area is very probably changed pretty much literally overnight. I do want to say one thing. If anyone has a question, they can call in. One, they need to dial 1-347-989-8904 and press number 1 and Robin, who's monitoring our switchboard, will get your question, and I can put you on. Or if you're in the chat room, you can just type in a question, and I'll pass it on to Darlise. With most districts, their schedule, they've been going back. Some of them go back and forth between hybrid and remote, completely remote. Some people have in-person instruction 5 days a week. Before they get into this and they have to make decisions, is there any advice, general advice you would give to them as they change their schedule with their staff?
So, like you said, Ray, we went from full-time in-person instruction on a Friday afternoon, and on a Monday morning, kids were home, teachers were in school, and the following day, people were teaching remotely. So it was literally over a weekend and overnight, something that was unprecedented. And there are no collective bargaining agreements that I know of that provide for anything for that. So the fact that schools reopened in September, well, that they taught the children from March through June, and then that they reopened in September with new plans is a testament to the hard work that was put in by the Department of Ed and by all the different school districts, by the teachers, by the administration, to create these plans so that kids could continue to get educated. So I would think that the most important thing, since there is no provision in any collective bargaining agreement or any other kind of contract for these types of things, for these changes in schedules, they created committees, they had teams that did a lot of planning, and the key to all of it, I think, is communication. I think that is a key ingredient in navigating employee issues normally, but especially during this pandemic. It's key really at all times. It's particularly true when there's so much uncertainty in the world. We have uncertainty in jobs and schools and health. Everything's been so incomprehensibly different since March 2020. And so the way to help people navigate all of this uncertainty, which of course brings on anxiety and stress, and not just for the adults but also for the kids, is to keep open the lines of communication. I find that in those districts where the superintendent and the administration was able to maintain clear communication with the union leadership and with the staff, in those places they've had less disagreements and less concerns about the having to change to different schedules. Where there's communication with the parents, there's less complaints also. It's an unfortunate situation where nobody's happy. Some parents want the children in school every day. Some parents want the children in school, never have the children in school. Some of them want something in the middle. And so it's been hard to please everyone. It's been impossible to please everyone and just hard to please the majority of the people, but I think as long as the decisions that are being made are in the best interest of children, if that's the top question, then everything else flows from that. And certainly, you know, talking to the union and getting their input from as to what, not letting the union make the decision, but having that conversation, because they're the ones that are in the schools. The teachers are the ones that are inside the schools teaching the kids, you know, boots on the ground. And we can design everything that we want and make sure that it's all legal, but if it doesn't work hands-on, then you have to readjust. And I think that that's what a lot of districts have been doing, is trying things out and having to readjust as they go along the way, especially since, you know, for a long time we were getting different health information, you know. What was an appropriate amount of distance between two people changed, whether there was a mask that was needed or not needed, that, you know, those, all that guidance just kept changing as we were learning more and more about the virus. So we've had to adjust and readjust for a year and continue to do so. So
now, one of the things as issues that had developed pretty quickly is that a lot of teachers have childcare issues of their own. They may not live in the district where they're teaching. How can a district deal with that? I know there's a family leave law, but how does the, and you can talk about that, how do districts approach and what are some of the legalities about teachers having their own child care issues?
So that became an issue, right? Because you have teachers who didn't live, if they lived in the district that they, where they taught, then that was a problem because they're teaching on the same day that their children are, they were teaching on the same day their children are in school. So if they're in person, that's okay. If it was remote, then that was, that posed a problem. And when teachers have children, they live in another town and the schedules don't align, that caused a series of problems. I know that I've spoken to a lot of teachers who had to make different childcare arrangements because the schedules didn't work well. Either they overlapped in a way that it didn't work, or they were on and off on different days. One of the things that was provided under the Federal Families First Coronavirus Response Act was that there were leave provisions for childcare related issues when schools were closed, and those leave provisions were set to expire in December, and they've been extended to March 31st, so staff can make themselves available of those leave provisions. And that has to be discussed with the superintendent. And then additionally, under the New Jersey Family Leave Law, provided that the employee hasn't taken leave time that's already available under the federal law, they might also be entitled to some additional leave time under the New Jersey Family Leave Act for school closures and child care provisions. We'll have to see if there are, now that there's a new federal administration, I don't know if there are going to be any changes to the federal law, whether there are going to be any additional extensions or anything else that's going to happen. As we said, we talked earlier, things change. Sometimes they change overnight, and so we have to keep our eyes open and check frequently to see what's out there, if there are going to be any new provisions or any new assistance from the federal government.
Now, one of the other issues, and I know everyone will be monitoring that, because even in March, my assumption now is that you won't see people fully in school in April or May, at least. But one of the other issues, most districts that I know kind of like surveyed their staff to see who had those childcare issues. But one of the other one was the what can you do with the staff member who maybe has they either have underlying conditions or they live with someone who has underlying conditions?
So that became an issue early on and continues to be. As with everything else that's health related, it has to be taken on a case by case basis individually. If it's the employee's health problem, then, you know, just like with any other kind of health problem and any other kind of, in normal times or in the before times, as they're calling them now, you would take a look at what's that individual's health problem, whether they can be accommodated, whether there can be some kind of a reasonable accommodation for their disability. And if so, what can that accommodation be? We had in the beginning of the school year, we had situations where we had employees who had health related issues, and they felt that they couldn't come and work in school in person. But after having a conversation with them and having their doctor have a conversation with the school doctor, what was discovered was that there were reasonable accommodations that could be made so that those employees could come to work. And they weren't very complicated. They were things like changing the employees' arrival time at school so that they wouldn't have to be inside the building for a long period of time, or changing the room so that they could enter and exit through a side door as opposed to having to be in the main office, or limit the amount of exposure to kids in the hallway, or provide an extra type of mask. So there were things that could be figured out that would make that employee feel comfortable to work, and so everybody won. But it involves conversation. And the same thing applies with if it's a request for a leave to take care of a family member. There has to be some type of documentation to show that this is necessary. And then a conversation to see what can be accommodated, what changes. Sometimes small changes can be made where it doesn't impact the children in school, but it helps the employee. So again, it all goes back to conversation.
Yeah, well, I think that's probably for any of the issues that come up during the pandemic, because they're all new and we're all trying to solve them together. One of the things that has come up, and question came to me, two questions, but we'll do the first one. Now that there's a vaccine, can a district mandate staff members take the vaccine? That's been a common question.
That's a really great question. it's possible. There's no set law that says that they're required to be vaccinated or that the district can require them to be vaccinated. There's guidance. There's some guidance from the EOC if an employer were to require vaccination, that the employer would have to give consideration to an employee who says that they have a legitimate medical or religious reason for not being vaccinated. And of course, in those situations, you'd have to have the same type of interactive process that you have for a request for an accommodation. But then you'd also have to take a look and see whether an employee who's not vaccinated poses a direct threat to the health or safety of individuals at the workplace. And you know, there's no set and clear answer on the vaccination issue. And I'm sure that there's clearly going to be more discussion about that. I would guess that if a school district imposed a requirement that teachers, for example, have to be vaccinated before they can come back to work in person, that the NJEA will have some choice words to say about that, one way or the other. Or maybe not. Maybe they'll want everyone to be vaccinated in order to be able to make sure that everyone is safe. So that one's yet to be decided, and we're going to have to really take a close look.
The vaccine just came about, so it's relatively new. And now, if a staff member, say their spouse, tests positive, and so now they have to quarantine at home for 14 days. Do they have to? Two questions on that. Can the district now have them do the remote learning instruction from their home? And if it's in person, their assignment's in person, how's the sick time work?
So that depends on the school district. In terms of teaching remotely while they're quarantining because they've been exposed to somebody who has tested positive. There are some school districts that have allowed for remote instruction for a variety of reasons, for remote teaching. There are some districts that have made the determination early on that they were not going to provide remote teaching as an option. And so I think it depends on the circumstances. Is it only that teacher that is being quarantined? What are the district's particular leave policies? There are some collective bargaining agreements that provide for quarantine time, for time to be paid because of a quarantine. Not too many, but I've seen at least one. So it would depend on that. It would also depend on whether other people, you know, are there other staff that have had to stay at home on quarantine, you know, because there was an exposure in school, for example, or So you'd have to see, it would have to be depending on each particular school district. Either way, it's possible. Some districts would choose to have that teacher teach remotely. That means that they would have to have somebody to be in the classroom with the students that are in class. Because if you've got tech kids in the classroom, they can't be left alone because the teachers are, is talking to them through the computer. So there are a lot of different considerations that would have to go into that. What was the second part of your question? Because I just still got it. Ray,
sorry.
Did I lose you?
Okay. You lost me for a second. No, I lost you. I had my cough button on. So if a district, if they have to take time off because their assignment's remote, how does the leave time, and you kind of answered that question already, work? Do they have to, because that's been an issue. We talked about earlier that there are, child care issues for some some staff members, and also some health issues. What happens if someone, a staff member says, I just don't want to come in. I just have a fear of COVID. And I'm just very uncomfortable coming in, but they don't really have a medical reason and they don't have a childcare reason. How can a district work through that? There are people like that too.
I've had the experience of that with some of my clients. So being afraid is not one of the reasons that was within the reasons for which you could get leave under the FFCRA. It would have to be something that's medically documented, that the stress that the person is undergoing, that they're incapable of working, in order to accept that as a reason for not coming in to work in district. In order to be able to get sick days for that time off, or to be eligible for some kind of a leave, there would have to be some kind of medical evidence that it's not just saying I'm afraid, but that the fear is such that maybe there's some clinical reason for it, because otherwise, again, you would have a lot of people are afraid. Mm-hmm. Even the teachers that are working in school are afraid. We're afraid to go to the supermarket sometimes. So it has to be part of the conversation with the individuals, with the employees, medical doctor, conversation with the school doctor, and see where we can take it from there. It's possible that somebody might just be entitled to ask for or just to leave without pay as an accommodation of some type because can't come to work. Again, always on a case-by-case basis.
Has there been any other personnel issues that have that you have had to deal with that we haven't really discussed that? As of yet, where I'm not getting into negotiation. It's a whole other program in and of itself. But mm-hmm. Has there been any other thing that you have seen that has really kind of surfaced every now and then?
Right. So things that surface every now and then are, when staff travel, when they've traveled outside of New Jersey, and then they have to quarantine. It's recommended that they quarantine. That became a conversation with some unions. In some places, the decision was made to pay the teacher to stay home because they went out of state. There was a discussion as to whether the need to go out of state was, whether it was necessary that they go out of state or whether it was just a vacation. For example, back in August, there were an employee left for the summer and went out of state for the summer. And when they left, the state that they went to was not on the travel restriction list. And for a while there, New Jersey's travel restriction list changed on a daily basis. Today you can go to Connecticut, tomorrow you can't. Today you can go to Indiana, tomorrow you can't. So if an employee left and didn't know that they were going someplace that was on the forbidden list or on the restricted list, you know, do you really want to charge them for having to stay home as opposed to somebody that intentionally went to a state that was on the restricted list, knowing that when they come back, they should be quarantining for 2 weeks? And then that got complicated by the fact that the federal government's guidance made teachers essential workers that didn't have to quarantine. And the intention of that designation was so that police and firemen and hospital workers and ambulance drivers would be able to come to work because they got exposure to people with COVID on a daily basis. So if they had to quarantine every time that they had exposure, they'd never be able to work. But teachers are in a different type of category, but they got sort of lumped in together. So that made it all really very interesting and a different conversation in every district depending on their union's position with respect to paying the teachers while they were out, while they were home quarantining after a trip. A lot of superintendents sent out letters encouraging everyone to please not go away, so that when the school break was over, for example, that they could come back to work. So mm-hmm. those things, again, they've been handled differently, but it's really muddy because you're really interfering with, it's really an interference with everybody's personal lives too, with whether they could,
right.
you know, go to a college graduation or a wedding or things, you know, life has gone on. People are still having babies and getting married and having graduations and things like that all over the country, and we still have to live and work. So it's been an interesting year, to say the least.
It's not over yet. At least
it's not over yet.
Pandemic part. And we're coming towards the end of it. Any other piece of advice you would give? And I know you, when you opened up, you said, and I agree, communication is probably the key, but anything else that you would say is a big key as you move forward and proceed with some of the issues that will be popping up?
Yeah, I mean, the advice that I give my clients on pretty much everything is that the overarching question before addressing anything, the overarching question is, before making a decision, is this in the best interest of kids? Is this good for kids? Is this good for students? And you have to answer that question first before you answer anything else, because school buildings exist and teachers exist and school lawyers exist because students are in school. That's our primary goal, is to educate them. And so that has to be the overarching question. And then the other piece is that you want your staff to be comfortable and happy and able to do their jobs well, because you can't have people teaching to the best of their ability with enthusiasm and rigor and joy if they're worried about whether or not they're going to become ill. And so as much as everybody can help one another to make sure that the staff are comfortable and that they feel safe and that they feel listened to. Because nobody has the answers. We know that. Nobody. And we have to find the answers as we move along. But if people feel that they're being heard, that their concerns are being heard, and that they have some type of input and buy-in into changes, it just makes for a much healthier workplace. It makes for a much more pleasant workplace, much better labor relations. And when folks are not listening, you know, when they're not worried about labor relations, they have a tendency to focus more on teaching and delivering the best instruction to the students. So that's my advice for every day, basically,
okay.
And certainly heightened for pandemic times.
Well, that brings us to the end of this conversation on school law issues, focusing on the personnel issues. I'd like to thank Doralise for joining me on this conversation. I think we are all learning as we go. I'd like to thank you. And if you want to listen to this, it will be saved. And everyone have a good afternoon.
Thank you, Ray. Have a good day.
Thank you. You too.